This episode is on the dielectric versus the electromagnetic fields, or waves. In other words, longitudinal versus the transverse. I may have stated this before, but I think it's worth stating again, just in case anybody didn't get it. The best analogy having to do with, there are different qualities of both fields, and so we use analogies to try to get the point across. Newton's cradle, Sir Isaac Newton's cradle, is a good analogy for both waves, in which the edge of the cradle, when the sphere pops up and goes back down again, is transverse, in other words, electromagnetic, while the spheres in the center that stay put and don't move, they stay put and they don't move. They just allow the energy to pass through them. They're a good example of longitudinal waves, namely the dielectric field, what oftentimes we call the electrostatic. But another example are dominoes. Because if anybody who's played with dominoes knows, if you have to space them apart. You know, you make your design pattern, and you have them spaced apart, and the spacing will determine the speed at which they fall. So if they're close together, they'll knock each other very quickly. The wave that will be a transverse wave that passes among them. It'll be similar to an electromagnetic field, and you can literally see the wave, the ripple, move among all the dominoes as it fans out and as they fall. And that's a transverse characteristic. That's electromagnetic. But if we were to stack them side by side, they wouldn't be able to fall, would they? And there'd be no time lag either. When you push at one end, you'd get an immediate response at the other end. So what does this mean? It means that when we set up a field, a dielectric field, an electrostatic field, if you prefer, of longitudinal characteristic, the energy has already arrived. It has already left and has already arrived because the field is set up that way. It's set up under tension. And it takes energy to create that tension. But when you push at one end and the result happens at the other simultaneously, it's because the field acts as a solid wave. The whole field is a singularity. Let's put it that way. The whole field is a singularity. As opposed to the transverse electromagnetic, in which the field is not a singularity, it's just a bunch of parts randomly associated in space with empty space in between. And so there has to be a time in which one particle gets shoved up against another. And then that second one, there's time before it has to be shoved up to the third. There's all these gaps in time, between the movement of every single particle in the wave, in the field, to exhibit the characteristics of movement of a wave. But in the case of a longitudinal, it's already there because it's already moved. Because the energy of the wave is expressed by the energy of the field. In other words, the whole field is acting as a singularity. So that when you shoved one side, the results happen at the other end simultaneously. And some of that has to do with compression, or tension if you prefer, in which the wave, the particles, the elements, the members of the field, of the dielectric field, are acting in unison together because of the tension or compression that the field is undergoing. In an electromagnetic medium, there's no tension or compression to speak of. And I don't know which is which. I don't know which applies, either tension or compression, because in theory, if we're just dealing with mechanical waves, logic would suffice to describe the fact that it doesn't matter whether the field is made of compression or tension. So, in a sense, and because we know that mechanical, optical, and the electrical waves are all similar, the fields, and their behavioral characteristics. It's just a different medium of expression. So that tells us that we can infer then that the dielectric and the longitudinal, the dielectric field having longitudinal characteristics, there are two different ways we can create that field. We got a choice, either compression or tension. But it has to be a certain amount of compression or a certain amount of tension such that the assemblage of parts starts to behave as a singularity. And once that's reached, any more compression or any more tension, you know, pulling apart tension, will still be sufficient to exhibit the characteristics of a longitudinal characteristics of that dielectric field. So it can be either positive or negative, either compression or tension, pulling it apart, or compression pushing it together. But in either case, you'll get a singularity. Now, you would think, no, wait a minute, why would tension create a singularity? If anything, tension should create a transverse medium of electromagnetic characteristics, if we're talking about electricity in particular. I don't know, the I Ching doesn't say that. The I Ching says if you go far enough in the extreme, you'll switch into the opposite, which means that the field may even switch if you compress it too much. It might explode on you. And if you pull on it too much, it may snap into compression, which means that both are applicable because of the fact that either one can flip into the opposite. It can invert. That's why I'm making that presumptuous comment that compression alone is not the only way to create a dielectric field of longitudinal characteristics. But that's a presumption on my part, but I'm willing to make that presumptuous hypothesis, speculation, guess estimate. I think that's enough said, though. So, except now let's take that to Newton's cradle. So the inside of Newton's cradle is under compression. And the edges, the actual spheres of movement, is this that singularity of compression is breaking apart, and that's why we get movement, because there's room enough for the movement to occur. But in the center there's no room, and so the little spheres are tightly packed together and they can't budge. They're under compression and they can't move, and so the wave has to go through them like a shock wave through solid granite. It just goes straight through them and they can't move, and so the wave gets passed from one to the next without their movement. Requires no movement on their part. So it's a pressure wave is what it is. It's a pressure wave that's passing through them, causing no movement, because they're already under pressure. That's wave. I think there's another term for that. I think it's called kinetic energy. Energy that's potential. It's there, stored, but we don't see it expressed. Versus, what's the opposite of kinetic energy? Maybe I may have my terms wrong. Maybe kinetic is the one that where it moves, and potential energy is where it does not move. I'll have to re-look it up again, but kinetic energy is one of the terms. I forget which one it applies to. Kinetic sounds like movement. Kinesthesis, yeah, so kinesthesiology. So kinetic energy actually would be the transverse movement, while potential energy is the dielectric. So you see how our words guides us into ignorance? Potential energy versus kinetic energy. Transverse versus longitudinal. Electromagnetic versus dielectric. And dielectric being electrostatic. So if we call electrostatic potential energy, that's really weird. But because it obliterates the possibility that we can send energy through a potential field and still nothing moves. But the energy moves, not the particles, not We don't see the movement, but the energy does move through it, even though we call it a potential field of static, electrostatic, electrodynamic characteristics. It's unbelievable the way our language now has set us up for ignorance and maintained that ignorance, despite the efforts of Nikola Tesla and Eric Dollard and all the other giants in their field who are trying to pierce our ignorance. And a few of us have managed to wake up a little. I mean, I certainly, you know, don't understand a whole lot, but I understand enough to know that part of our problem is our language barrier, which forces us to see things and describe things a certain way by way of association, similarities of word meaning. So when we say static, it means like potential, but it's not static. Although potential in terms of movement, but not static in terms of movement, because the energy is passing through as so-called potential energy, but it's not potential because we can use it. You see? Nikola Tesla used it. He created longitudinal X-rays that were safe as hell and didn't do any damage to the body and was 20 times stronger. And you know why it was 20 times? Because the field was under compression or tension, whatever, acting as a solid unit, so that when you shake, everything around you shakes, and when the wave passes through you, it creates the photographic image on the photographic plate, but it does not, it moves with you rather than out of sync with you, so that it cannot damage you. I think I've done that in another episode, talking about how the wave moves through a solid field such that the whole field doesn't move, and so nothing can get damaged. If you're packed like dominoes, packed really tight like sardines up against your neighbor, how are you going to hurt each other? If you all move, if the wave of energy moves through you as a solid block of people, a solid block mass of people. But if you're spaced apart and each person, you know, like dominoes, knocks over the next, you're going to get hit. You're going to get bruised. So the best way to analogize that would be to say that the block of people, they're all hugging each other really tight, really tightly. You've got your arms around your neighbor, and your neighbors have their arms around you or others in that mass of people, so that everybody is linked up very solid, and everybody's squeezing tight their neighbor, and nobody's slacking off. So when you push, and now notice, it's not going to be easy to move a wave. I've covered this in an episode on Stanley Meyer. I have a few YouTube animated videos trying to analyze Stanley Meyer, and I bring up this. If you know, I may not do much justice to Stanley Meyer. I try, but I give a lot. I do give a certain amount of attention to longitudinal versus transverse, and so I think I cover this there. Now I forgot what I said. I was going to say that I cover there. Something to do with tightly packed. Oh darn. Oh dear. Anyway. So this is an important thing to talk about, because it's in this field that Nikola Tesla was working with. And he did his best to the amount of energy it takes to move a wave within a longitudinal field. And that's why you have to get into resonance, while with a transverse field you don't have to, because all the particles within a field exhibiting transverse characteristics, an electromagnetic field, they're, you know, just moving around at random. And this is the way particles are defined in space. You raise the temperature, and their so-called random actions that are random with respect to each other becomes more excitedly active, more rapid, so that when you raise the temperature, the particles can diffuse more quickly, because they're vibrating. They're randomly bumping around more speedily. But they're inferring a transverse field. When we're talking about a longitudinal or a dielectrical field, the objects can't move because they're too tightly packed or too tightly stretched, whatever the case may be, such that you raise the temperature, you can't see the temperature raise. In fact, where's the temperature? The whole field moves in unison. It ain't going to be random action. Let's put it that way. It's not going to be randomized action of the individual particles of the field because they too tightly packed or too tightly stretched to be able to move random with respect to each other. So all these models that we draw are models of our ignorance of the dielectrical field exhibiting longitudinal characteristics. It's amazing. It's truly amazing, our ignorance. It's collective. Our ignorance is collective. There's no question about it. So I've tried to cover as many examples as I can in this audio file, which without any actual visual aids. But we have dominoes. We have Newton's cradle. We have all these examples in the mechanical world that you just have to go out and play with Newton's cradle and play with dominoes and try to understand the difference between these two fields and the waves that make up these two fields. And when I look, and the other thing I might as well mention is that Newton's cradle shows how the wave can change as it passes through one field into another field. In other words, if it goes, starts out as a transverse field at the edge of Newton's cradle when we drop the ball, and then it passes, the wave converts itself into a longitudinal wave out of being a transverse when it passes through the dielectric field of the stationary spheres in the middle, and then it comes into a transverse field at the edge, because the edge is just like the ripple on a pond. Eric Dollard says when you the only time we have a transverse wave is when, Thomas Brown says it too, is when we have a wave traveling between the boundaries between two different mediums, like water and air. We see the ripple on the surface of the pond, but the longitudinal wave travels underneath the surface deep, and that deep wave does not touch the bottom of the pond, nor does it touch the surface of the pond. It just travels through and is not aware of any boundaries. It just is aware of the compression that it's undergoing, but it has no awareness of any boundary characteristics that would cause it to turn into a ripple. And Thomas Brown, in that Eric Dollard video from Borderlands, in which Peter Lindemann is behind the camera, he says how its tsunami travels deep under the water and the boat on the surface doesn't know it because it's a longitudinal wave, a compression wave. But when that tsunami reaches the shore of some continental mass of land, it hits a boundary and it turns into a transverse wave, rises up and splashes a whole bunch of water across the landmass as a tidal wave. So that deep tsunami turns into a tidal wave, but you wouldn't have known it when it was out in the middle of the ocean. You wouldn't know it if you were a boat. But if you were a boat near the shoreline, whoopsie, what do you tell boat owners? Get out to the open waters. If you hear a tsunami, you hear that somebody tells you a tsunami is coming in your direction. Because that deep compression wave, that longitudinal wave, is going to turn into a transverse wave when it reaches the shore. So there's another perfect example of, in this case, similar to Newton's cradle, in which the wave changes its characteristic when it reaches a boundary. But when it's out in the open water, there's no boundaries there, and so it doesn't feel the ocean bottom because it's not moving in that direction. It's moving parallel to the ocean bottom, parallel to the surface of the ocean. So it doesn't feel them. It has no reason to, because all its energy is in a forward motion, parallel to the direction of motion, I should say. It's parallel to the direction of motion. While a transverse wave hits a boundary, and now it's perpendicular, or at an angle to perpendicular, but similar enough to engage the perpendicularity characteristic of the boundary to rise up as a tidal wave and splash a whole bunch of water onto the land, to move that water. Whereas in the middle of the ocean, none of that water is moving. It's a shock wave moving through a compressed zone. I guess you could say it's under tension in the sense that something must be under tension. What, the empty space between the water molecules is under tension? While the water molecules themselves are under compression? You know, now it's a question of which is the glass half full, half empty. Well, then it depends upon which are you talking about, the space or the water molecules. So I guess you have both tension and compression at the same time. It's just a question of which is under compression and which is under tension. The question then arises, well, could you have space under compression and water under tension? I don't know how to answer that question. Be that as it may. I mean, that's a good place to stop, is when I reach a point of ignorance on my part. Stop talking. Okay. Here's an additional thought. While I was meditating, I realized that when we speak, our voice is a transverse wave, but our silence is like the silence of the longitudinal waves passing underneath us when we're out in the middle of the ocean. They're there, but we just don't feel them, and they don't feel us, yet they pass by us. So in a sense, the silence versus speech, the sound of our speech, is kind of sort of analogous to the longitudinal versus the transverse. The longitudinal is there, but you won't know it necessarily, and that's why we're ignorant of it. And the only way to validate their existence is by inference. In other words, if all we focused on was a sphere in the very center of Newton's cradle and didn't see it move, and didn't see anything else around it move, we would just think that there's nothing happening. That's why it's called potential energy as opposed to kinetic, because we don't see the shock waves that are going through it. Whereas if we expand our vision to include the whole of Newton's cradle, both ends as well as the spheres in the middle, then we can see what's happening, but we have to infer what's happening in the middle, because we don't see the spheres moving. We just see them on either end, popping up and coming down, and then popping up on the other side and coming down, swinging. So we infer from the actions of the transverse wave the presence of the longitudinal wave in between, in Newton's cradle. And that's what we do with silence. We can infer activity, but that doesn't mean that we have to assume that just because we're ignorant of any active sound waves happening, that energy is not happening at all. It's just we don't know it because of the silence. It doesn't tell us what's happening, you know, to our face, so we won't know. But that doesn't mean there's not any activity there. There is activity in silence. It's just passing through. Passing through, like two ships passing in the night. We don't see the other ship. It doesn't have its lights on. And we don't brush up against it. And it doesn't create any wake such that it bobs our ship. Because maybe we're two massive ships, right? So the little waves, the little wake that we create of waves in the water, trailing out from us, from the bow of our ship breaking the water, we don't feel the wake, the waves of the wake created by the ship, and they don't feel ours. So we're like two massive ships passing in the night, very casually, and we don't see each other, we don't know each other, because we're both in silence. Yet there we are, passing each other, and we don't even know it. So we can infer from this then that two longitudinal waves passing through a dielectric field won't even know about each other's presence. So there you go. Much less a transverse wave knowing about the presence of a longitudinal wave. So literally, longitudinal waves are like practicing the invisibility sutra of Yoga Patanjali. You wouldn't even know they're there. And that is the utmost of humility, meekness, modesty, moderation, not inverted egotism, but just that sense of not even leaving a footprint behind, not even any evidence, a scrap of evidence, that the longitudinal wave had passed through, had passed by. That's how silent they are. That's how innocent. Innocence, that's another word. Innocence, humility, grace. To flow with such grace that no impression is made on the external environment. I should learn from that.